All right, we are in the fruit of the Spirit. We're getting closer to the end here now, but let me again review the matter of being filled with the Spirit. It is a matter of who is controlling us. Is the Spirit of God, who is a person, controlling you, or are you controlling you? Are you depending upon Him, or are you depending upon your flesh? And let me just say, ladies, it's a very major difference. The choice you make between the Spirit and the flesh, though it may not seem obvious at the moment, the fruit of the flesh is corruption. And many, many believers wonder why they have so many problems in their life. And I'm not talking about trials that God allows, but trials that we bring on ourselves. And it's because we are far more in the flesh than we even want to admit. And so this matter of living in the Spirit is very important. And a way to determine how you're doing is the matter of the fruit of the Spirit. Remember, as I've mentioned each time, the fruit is singular. It's not plural, which means that when we are controlled by the Spirit, we will see evidenced in our lives every aspect given in chapter 5, verses 22 and 23. And that is all of that should be there. Now we develop in our wisdom, our understanding, our character develops the more we walk in the Spirit. It's the fact is that when we're walking in the Spirit, every virtue found in the fruit of the Spirit should be evident. The beginning of the fruit of the Spirit was what quality? Love, which is really overshadows all of it. Everything gets back to the matter of victory over self so that we can live for God and so that we can live for others. So love is at the beginning, and we're going to look today at the end one, and that is temperate. And the matter of temperance is dealing with the power to overcome self so that we can love. And so you can go through every virtue that we've looked at and you can see how both love is a key aspect of it, and temperance is a very key part of that. And so we've got to understand to be patient takes temperance, right? To be kind takes temperance. To show forth goodness takes temperance, and so on. And so all of these go together. They intertwine, and they're very, very important. So the way you want to define temperance is simply self-control. It is victory over self on a regular basis. And so we cannot be faithful, filled with faith on a regular basis without being temperate, any of these. And it means in the Greek self-discipline, self-restraint of one's desires and lusts. Even back in the classical Greek, Plato used this term to describe the person who has mastered his desires and love of pleasure. So it is controlling our will by the power of the Spirit to accomplish what is right and to overcome what is selfish and is wrong. And so if you want to put it in really simple terms, self-control is the ability to keep oneself in check. And that is a moment-by-moment challenge for everybody. It's self-restraint. It's self-government. It is self-command. It is controlling our passions, our appetites, pleasures, desires, impulses, physical, sensual, sexual. All of these are spoken of when we are thinking of temperance. And if you look at chapter 5, we have in verse 16 the wonderful promise that I've mentioned many times. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Well, that's temperance, not fulfilling the lust of the flesh. And then it talks about the battle. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary the one to the other, so that ye cannot do the things that ye would. In other words, if you're controlled by the flesh, you don't have self-control. You may have some character that keeps you from some things, but you don't have self-control when Satan attacks. And if you're in the Spirit, you are able to overcome the flesh. Now, the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these, and it gives that ugly list of adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like. And so there's this big battle that goes on. Now, we're not talking here, when we talk about temperance or self-control, a human resolution like you do at New Year's, you know, where you make a New Year's resolution. We're talking about the control of the Spirit that enables you to say no to what is not the best and to say yes to what is God's will. And so that is very, very important. And this is something, again, that we all have to fight. It's a big tug of war. So how often do you need the Spirit of God to help you with self-control? Every second. I like that. Not every minute, but every second. That is exactly right. You faced a number of things this morning. Somewhere this morning, you actually did get up because you're here. I'm very smart, and I want you to know that. I'm very discerning. So you did get up, and you overcame the desire to stay in bed. Anybody have a desire to stay in bed? Anybody have that? Okay, that's all right. I mean, that's, but you overcame that. And a number of other things that we could mention. And so oftentimes for a believer that's endeavoring to walk with the Lord, it's the things that don't seem so bad that are still the things that get us out of walking with the Spirit. We cave into desires that are maybe not so obviously bad, but they are purely selfish desires. And so we need to make sure that we understand that. So what does temperance do? What does self-control do when we're walking in the Spirit? And it's evident in our lives. Here are some things. Self-control controls and checks the self. In other words, self is not dominating. Self is not ruling. You are aware of the danger of self. By the way, when you are controlled by the flesh, you don't see the danger of self as much. When you're walking in the Spirit, you're aware of even little things. Sometimes you can have an overconscience, but many times I have found that just little caving into some, you know, it's a legitimate, but it's a selfish kind of desire, eating something more than I need to eat, or, you know, something like that, you realize, wait a second, I've just given in. And, you know, that kind of thing can lead to who knows what if we don't get back into walking in the Spirit. And so it's really the battles right in the everyday trenches of life that we have to control. It restrains the self. In other words, it does not let self dominate. If in some of the appetites you say no, did you know when you're tempted to think wrong thoughts about people that you will say no? It really starts in very mundane things and gets to some very dangerous things. Self-control disciplines and masters the self. When you have temperance and you are walking in the Spirit on a regular basis for a while, you are developing character traits of saying no. Now, you can depend upon that and not walk in the Spirit, but it's wonderful when God renews your mind, because you're being transformed by the renewing of your mind, and you're able to prove what is that good and perfect and acceptable will of God. You're able to do the will of God, and so it's a very important matter of having that kind of discipline. Self-control holds in and commands the self. In other words, you make your body, your mind, your life accomplish God's will. You do not yield to it to do your selfish will. Who's really mastering you? It's been said, no one can accomplish much in their life if they do not live with temperance a good part of the time. Without self-discipline, even in the secular world, even without self-discipline, people are not able to achieve. You can see all kind of problems with pro athletes, but the one thing you've got to give them is that in the area of keeping their body in a place of being in shape and learning their skills, they're self-disciplined there and they can achieve. A lazy athlete, are they going to stay in pro athlete athletics very long? Absolutely not. They will be out pretty fast. And that happens a lot, by the way. That's just in the very secular realm. So to put it all together, self-control says no to self. Capital N, capital O, exclamation mark, okay? It says no to the flesh. And by the way, when you're controlled by the Spirit, you can consciously say no. Not going there, not doing that, not thinking that, not caving in there. And the Spirit of God just lifts you and gives you grace and gives you a joy about doing it. And so you really need to endeavor to develop those habits by the grace of God. She mentions here in this chapter that a friend of hers wrote these things that I just mentioned to you on a 3x5 card and taped it to her bathroom mirror just as a reminder every morning about the need for temperance. Then what does self-control not do? Self-control does not yield to temptation. In other words, you will be tempted by your sinful flesh. You will be tempted by Satan, who will use your flesh to tempt you. But that says there's a not yielding to that. Doesn't give in to desires. Do you realize how many desires we have? You know, it's funny how you can have a taste for something, or you want to do this, or I mean, our minds are something else. But whatever desires are there that are not the will of God at the moment, the Spirit of God helps us to say no to that. Self-control does not participate in sin, categorically. If it is clearly sin, no question, there cannot be any consideration of it. It does not indulge itself. It just doesn't put itself first. And you know, when you think about so many commercials and so forth, it's all about what you deserve and what you need to have and how this is going to make you happy. Temperance doesn't get fooled by that and does not satisfy self. In other words, you do not see that as your primary purpose. So, what is the slogan for self-control? And there's a... If you think about it, if you go back to the other aspects of the fruit of the Spirit, faithfulness means do it. Do what's best. Do what is of faith. Do what God calls you to do. On a regular basis, by the power of God, be faith-filled, be faithful, do it. Gentleness, if you remember, we talked about, says take it. Take the injustice. Take the hard things. Don't react. For the understanding then of self-control, you could say, don't do it, okay? Instead of do it for faithfulness, it's don't do it. Don't do anything that is the urging of our fallen flesh. We should not give in to cravings, to urges, and whatever you know is against God's word. Don't pamper yourself. We as Americans are masters at pampering ourselves. Now again, we don't go into the opposite. The Bible warns us about asceticism, getting into self-deprivation just to feel better about ourselves. We're not talking about that. But don't pamper yourself. And here's the biggie, don't rationalize. Man, I tell you what, we could argue before the Supreme Court when it comes to our ability to come up with an excuse for self-indulgence, you know. Don't rationalize. And a thousand others don't do it. One said the word self-control means the ability to say no. It is the Spirit-empowered willpower to have won't power. Another, I won't do that. To say yes at the right times and to say no at the other times. Now, folks, when you think about it, you can see why this is sort of the overall concluding aspect to the fruit of the Spirit, because it affects everything. Everything that you look at in the fruit of the Spirit is going to be opposite of flesh, and it's going to be the temperance, the self-control of the spirit to be able to accomplish that. Now, several examples are given that are very familiar to us. We find David showing great self-control. He, in 1 Samuel 24, he was the object of jealousy of King Saul, and the spear was thrown at him, and so he goes and he enters a cave. And I've been around that area, and he entered a cave, and in that cave was no less than the army of Israel, and there was King Saul, and they were all in the deep sleep. So what could have David done immediately? Could have killed him. And you'd think he would have a righteous cause to do so. But this was the Lord's anointed. God would not let him do it. And I guarantee you he thought about it. Wasn't that he was just such a nice guy, you know. He was a warrior. No, he thought about it. And everybody with him was ready to do it. And because it just was really insane what Saul was doing. But he did not kill him. The second time he could have done that. Twice he did not kill him. He showed great self-control. But is there another time when he did not show self-control? The tragic story of Bathsheba and David. And that's one of the saddest stories there in 2 Samuel chapter 11. And this man who had the Spirit of God come upon him, remember in the Old Testament, kings and prophets would have the Spirit of God come upon them. We are so blessed to be indwelt by the Spirit of God. So he would have had the power. And there's a lot of things. You've heard messages as he shouldn't have stayed back. And I don't know, but let's just go to what occurred. He saw the temptation. He considered it. He found out who she was. And then he acted upon the temptation. And by the way, sometimes lack of temperance has some pretty major consequences. He had 4 sons die because of that. You got to remember, when we disobey the Lord and allow fleshly lust to control, it's not just us who is hurt. Always many, many other people are hurt. The nation of Israel was hurt. You had the rebellion of Absalom. You had a divided nation. But do you realize that the rebellion of Absalom, which God allowed because of David's sin, is what divided Israel to the place at the time of Rehoboam that the nation could be split, because they were already somewhat split at that point because of what had happened. Listen, you don't go to war with one another and forget it. People were living the Civil War into the early 1900s. They were still fighting it, I mean, their minds, you know. And so this was still very real. So the sin there, and so keep that in mind about the importance of walking in the Spirit and having self-control in your lives, because it's tragic, the consequences that do come. And you know the key, there's always a way of escape, as we find the Apostle Paul writes, to temptation. And the way of escape is taken immediately. You don't consider anything that is not right or biblical. In other words, you're into a trap. The moment you start meditating on a wrong thought about somebody, you could really get stuck into bitterness. You covet something and you think about it too much, you can make a really terribly wrong financial decision. And on you could go. So when you are tempted, you've got to reject that. When the moment you realize that is opposed to what God wants for me, I've got to say no on the front end. And there's always a way of escape. And I'm telling you, when you say no on the front end, there's power. There's just power there to just take you on the right road. And when you take that way of escape over and over and over, there's a pathway in your life that is just there, and that becomes the pathway that you take, and it's a wonderful thing. Of course, we know about Achan. What a tragic thing. It was very clear. I mean, it couldn't have been clearer from Joshua that God said, this city is mine. This was the tithe of the nation of Israel for all that God was going to give them, and they were not to touch anything. It was all to go to the tabernacle. And Achan saw it, according to his own explanation when he went into the tent or the house there. He coveted it, and then he took it. And so the wind, if this was a New Testament Christian, at what point did he step out of being filled with the Spirit? He dwelling on the coveting. He couldn't help see it, but when he considered it, he was now in trouble. And then there's the contrast between Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Evidently, Joseph was a very, very striking young man with great virtue and great ability. And, you know, the wicked culture of Egypt, women weren't treated all that well. And Potiphar's wife went after Joseph. She had no self-control. She just continued to want what she wanted. She was not used to being said no to. Who knows what kind of lifestyle she lived. But Joseph, day after day, said what? No, no, no. And then when he was caught alone, you know the story, he ran. I mean, he was, by the way, why could he run? Because he'd been saying no. In other words, when the pressure came on, and the key to him was that, how can I do this great evil and sin against God? And honestly, folks, that's where the reasoning needs to be. Even in the little things, I don't need to have this to fulfill myself. It could be something that no one would think was bad, but you know that you're caving into your desires, and you lose the power of God for that. That's a sin against God. And that's our highest motive, is this right from God's point of view? And so he understood that God was with him. One of the keys that you'll find when you study Joseph is you'll see the little phrase, God was with him, God was with him, God was with him. And it wasn't just God chose to be with him, Joseph chose to be with God. And he had a relationship with God that carried him through some of the most enormous temptations that any young man could ever face, and yet God was able to mightily use him. And do take note, when we say no, then God says yes to great usefulness in our lives, and we can see God work. You know, it's amazing what people, for small pleasures, you know, I know I shouldn't be watching this kind of entertainment, but you know, it's not all that bad. And they wonder why they never do anything for God. You know I don't need to be in this kind of place, or I don't need to be having this as my priority, and it doesn't seem all that big a deal, but they don't have God's power. They're not sensitive to the Spirit. They're not seeing God lead and guide them. It's tragic what we sell our souls for as believers. And so anything that bothers your conscience, don't do it unless you know God wants you to do it. Learn to say no, even if in doubt. Remember, if we're in doubt, we're damned if we eat, it says there in Romans. So it's very important for us to be very careful about that. And he wasn't going to sin against God, and clearly he knew this was wrong. There was no dad there to tell him no. There was no Israelite around to remind him of the law. And of course, the law wasn't given, but what they did understand, he just knew. Jerry Bridges, which has written several books that I've appreciated, wrote in The Practice of Godliness, "Ultimately, self-control is the exercise of inner strength and the direction of sound judgment that enables us to do, think, and say the things that are pleasing to God." And I would only add to that, through the power of God. That's not said in that verse, but it is that inner strength that gives us sound judgment, enables us to think and say the things that are pleasing to God. So is this matter of self-control a bit of a struggle? Yeah. That's what it says in Galatians 5, so don't be thrown by that. You can walk with the Lord a long time, but if you let down at all, anything can be a struggle. And as we often quote, when you think you stand, take heed lest you fall. You've got to humbly say, Lord, I need you all the time. She gives the illustration that one of the big problems with her was just simply eating to sort of cope with the moment. And that's a very easy thing, especially here in America. We've got enough food at the moment. And so that can be a self-control issue. And then she also mentions about thoughts. That's a big issue. We did go through the book that she wrote, Loving God with All Your Mind. Remember, we talked about all the different aspects of how to control our thinking, and that's where so many of our problems come from. And thinking about people, thinking about circumstances, ultimately thinking about God. And we can indulge in just wrong thinking, and we know it's wrong thinking. Money is another big one. It's so easy to fall for the advertising of our day, the opportunity to have things, to think that things are going to make things better. Technology, have you noticed how it's quite expensive these days? And to be able to stay on technology, we're putting out of a lot of money. And we got to ask ourselves, what do we really need? Do we need the latest gadget? Do we need the latest thing? Do we need all of that? And then closely related to that is possessions. And it's very right for a woman to want her place where she lives to be her little, her special place, but it can get a little bit overdone, stopping at every store and stopping at every yard sale, looking for things if you don't watch out when that isn't the priority time. Now, the one thing about yard sales is if you witness to somebody before you leave, I'll give you a dispensation, okay? So, in fact, we ought to check in. Of course, we're getting past the season for garage and yard sales, but we ought to have a little check-in. I did go to a yard sale, but I witnessed. So, and then we'll let you off the hook, okay? But I'm amazed. My wife's real good about it, and she's careful, but she loves to go just because of people. And, I mean, there are people, and you can stand there and talk to them. I mean, it's a great, great place, so that's good. And then she brings this up. I did not write this. She says coffee. Okay, I'm sorry, all of you with your coffee here. She said that she definitely got out of control with her coffee. And so I'll let you read that part of the chapter. But I said amen when I read that. So that is a bit of an addiction that we have to watch out for. I actually myself caved into drinking too much coffee about 30 years ago now. And I finally had to say, for me, it finally was, just stop it. You know, because when you're under pressure all the time, and I have had a propensity back then for sinus headaches. I don't have them. I haven't had them for years because of ENT surgery, which was wonderful. And so I've not had the problem. But it was a way to cope. The caffeine would open up your sinuses. And so, but I remember getting off of that. Huh, that was awful. I said, that kept me from, as if I said, if this is anything like what heroin addicts go through, it was bad. I shouldn't joke about that because that's really tragic. But so anyway, I've learned that water, it's amazing. You say water. Oh, come on, Pastor. That doesn't... I'm saying very positive. You drink a bottle of water instead of a cup of coffee, you will feel much better. I promise you. But I'm sorry, you all have coffee, so forget I just said that. But it was in the book. I'm being true to the book. And she spends a whole page on it, okay? So anyway, you can take it up with her and just leave me out of it. Of course, you've heard me say that before, so I'm really working on Dr. Jim. He's got I need to get him over his addiction of Dunkin' Donuts, but we'll work on that. All right. But the point is, we do a lot of things just because we want to do them. And it's not the wisest financially. It's not the wisest use of our time. So I'm going to have to finish up. I've got a special speaker coming here. But let me just conclude with this. How do you see the self-control come? Of course, yield to the Spirit, but begin with Christ. He's your Lord, and you want to please Him. Monitor your input. In other words, really evaluate your life. Because you can slide into coping and self-gratification in areas without even knowing that you're getting into it. Stay busy. David's problem was at that time he wasn't busy, and Potiphar's wife probably wasn't busy. Learn to say no. If you can't control your spirit, you're like a city that is broken down and without walls. Have that as part of a key part of how you respond. And then, so important, pray. Get into a genuine relationship with the Lord and ask Him to work, and He will give you self-control. So temperance ends it up, love begins it. And why don't you talk a little bit about that here today, about how that all ties together. In fact, that would be a good discussion, how it puts all the virtues together. So, all right.